You're tuned to Perspectives, a weekly public affairs show which airs every Saturday right here on KTEP. Good afternoon. I'm Louis Sines, your host for Perspectives, and joining us today is Dr. Christina Mena. Dr. Mena is an associate professor with the UT School of Public Health, and we'll talk a little bit more about that. It's been a while since we've had somebody from the UT School of Public Health here, but Dr. Mena, thank you very much for taking time out of your busy schedule, because I know in addition to being a doctor, you're an associate professor as well. So thank you very much for being with us here today.
Thank you.
Now tell us a little bit. As I mentioned, we haven't had anybody from the UT School of Public Health for a while. Tell us about this cooperation or coalition or joint venture that we have with UTEP.
Okay. Well, yes, I'm with UT Houston School of Public Health, and we are one of six campuses around the state. So our main campus obviously is in Houston, so we're part of the medical center there. And we were established here in 1992, and we offer graduate degrees in public health. And then a lot of our faculty have adjunct appointments within various departments within UTEP. And so we serve on student committees, provide research opportunities, maybe guest lecture in a class.
Now, what is the difference, if you don't mind telling us, explaining to our audience, because we hear a lot about health and we hear about public health, and a lot of times people have a misconception about what public health is. Would you mind explaining what the difference is?
Sure. Public health is looking at a population as a whole. So as opposed to a medical doctor who treats and diagnoses the individual patient, public health looks at an entire population, or if you will, disease occurrence within an entire community.
So you're talking about, for example, if there's an outbreak of something, like when we had the flu, et cetera?
Exactly, right. So they'll look at different communities to see if they can detect any trends in disease, as opposed to diagnosing and treating a single individual. It will be all about prevention and how can we keep an illness from spreading within an entire population.
Now, one of the reasons, and we'll talk more about the school in just a minute, one of the reasons we decided to bring you in is because a week ago, story broke, and it was in the El Paso Times, about a virus called cyclospora. Is that correct?
Right, yeah. So it's a parasite called cyclospora, and it's transmitted through contaminated food and water.
So does that mean that people are not washing their hands when they go to the restroom, or do they not wash their produce, vegetables, etc., or all of the above?
Well, all of the above typically, but cyclospora is actually pretty unique, so it's a somewhat different situation. It's very rare in the United States, but when we talk about the things that you were just mentioning, that's actually fairly common for folks to obtain a waterborne or a foodborne illness because of those factors you just mentioned. Cyclospora is endemic in countries in the tropics and subtropics, so it's very rare in the United States. So when an outbreak of cyclospora was observed, then it alerted the FDA and CDC that, you know, hey, something unusual is going on here.
And how was that discovered? What happened?
Well, a cluster of cases were noticed, I believe, first in the states of Iowa and Nebraska, and it's very difficult to identify an outbreak associated to specifically identify the agent associated with that outbreak because the symptoms are so generic. So in the case of cyclospora, as with other pathogens or disease-causing microorganisms, it causes profuse diarrhea, weight loss, low-grade fever, body aches, sometimes vomiting, very general symptoms that could be numerous things. When they see a cluster of patients within a community that has those symptoms in a relatively short period of time, then tests will be done to identify the causative agent. And in this case, cyclospora was identified.
So if someone has a stomach ache or has diarrhea, any of these symptoms that you just mentioned, is that there a cause to worry there, or when should they go see their doctor, or what should they do?
Well, typically people don't go see the doctor when they have symptoms like that. And I will say typically within a couple of days, depending on the person's immune system, the infection and illness will take its course and the person will get better on their own. It's when things are prolonged or the symptoms are prolonged, or if that person falls in what we call the immunocompromised category, That includes the elderly, very small children, pregnant women, transplant recipients, HIV patients. Those individuals may want to take extra precaution, and if they experience those symptoms, then they should seek medical attention.
Now, because of where we live, and of course we know that diseases, parasites, whatever, don't know borders. They'll just affect, and I'm not saying that Mexico has anything to do with this because we're just as guilty. It could affect anyone, as you mentioned. So as far as people in general being careful, should they watch as far as like what they eat, how they eat, or, you know, we don't want to alarm people saying don't go buy produce or vegetables, anything like this, because you're going to get sick. But the fact that it hasn't been seen for 10 years, I think, is what the news said. Is that unusual?
For cyclospora?
Yes.
It is. It is, but whenever you're talking about food that is minimally processed or eaten raw, such as fresh produce or mixed salad greens, there's going to be that potential for a person to come in contact with the contaminated produce. So that is not uncommon, and that can happen anywhere in the world. Now, it is unusual that it's cyclospora, but one interesting point is that oftentimes the medical community won't think to look for cyclospora. So again, if someone has those symptoms of gastroenteritis and perhaps vomiting and they do seek medical attention, oftentimes the causative agent is never identified. So it's probably also undiagnosed at times, but we just know when you look at the epidemiology of this particular parasite worldwide compared to other agents transmitted via food and water, it's just very rare in this country. I think at the consumer level, it's important for individuals to take responsibility and, you know, wash their produce, even if it is in prepackaged bags that says they were pre-washed. It's important to, you know, run it under a faucet of water to try to mechanically remove any pathogens that may be on the lettuce leaves, for example.
Dr. Mena, why is it unusual in this country?
Well, cyclospora in particular is just common in the tropics and subtropics. And like I said, it's also not often looked for, so it's probably there's cases that go undiagnosed. The interesting thing about cyclospora, unlike other organisms transmitted via food and water, is that it's not transmitted person to person. And so when you think about it and you have a fecal-oral route of transmission, such as with most waterborne and foodborne outbreaks, you know, those foodstuffs became compromised with, you know, human feces, let's say. Typically then, because of that fecal-oral transmission, those pathogens would be transmitted from person to person. Cyclospora is unique in that it does complete its life cycle within the human host, but the human excretes oocysts in the feces, and it's required that the oocysts mature before it becomes infective for the next person. And that can take as long as 2 weeks. So that's why it's not transmitted person to person. And I think that's why there's not as much concern as there might be with another agent if we had an outbreak here.
And as far as finding the hosts, is that difficult because of the way that this disease works?
Yes. It's like the source of the – it's very difficult because of, one, the generic symptoms. It's difficult oftentimes to even identify an outbreak has even occurred at all. In this case – when, due to the number of cases occurring in Iowa and Nebraska, they did observe an outbreak due to their epidemiological study and findings, they were able to trace it to the salads sold at Olive Gardens and Red Lobster. But it's very difficult to have all the pieces in place to be able to do that.
Now, would you mind explaining to us, you mentioned earlier about endemic, and a lot of people sometimes wonder, well, what is, if you explain endemic, pandemic, and epidemic, they think of them as words, and sometimes they'll use them in the wrong way or think that all three of them mean the same.
Right. Well, okay, so epidemic is when we talk about an outbreak. So you observe illnesses within a community greater than what would be typically or expected or observed. For endemic, it's when there are organisms that like that environment, that they're commonly found in that environment. So when I mentioned the tropics and subtropical countries where cyclospora is more common, most of those people, however, who are infected are asymptomatic. So they're not showing clinical symptoms. And so when people travel to those particular areas, they are more likely to come in contact with certain organisms, and in this case, you know, cyclospora, because it's so common within those communities.
So in those communities, because it's so common, are a lot of those people immune to them? I remember a few years back, CDC did a study here that a lot of Hispanic people were immune to some of the vaccines that they were getting for TB because they would stop taking them after they felt better.
Right. I think probably what's more commonly observed is that they're asymptomatic. So they can carry it in their system, but they don't show symptoms. So they don't have the frequent loose diarrheal stools every day. And it's just part of their microbiome within their system, because that's where those organisms like to harbor in those particular countries. So it's just very, very common for them to be circulating within the community.
I think when I was reading up on this, one of the things that jumped out at me was the fact that sometimes it can take as long as months for you to get rid of it.
Right. And that's another characteristic of this organism, is that there you have seen that some patients can go into remittance and then have a relapse. So they can stop having symptoms, but then maybe a month later have symptoms again. So that's a characteristic of this particular parasite.
Now, when you're talking about parasites, and a lot of people don't realize that there are a lot of there's a difference between a virus and different things in the medical community that you can catch and you can't catch, and you have to be careful. And one of those things sometimes, like let's say, for example, I am changing the topic on you. When you hear about yeast infections or thrush, some people relate that to diet, and some people say, well, only women can get that, but men can also suffer that, and that includes also fatigue and other things like that, correct?
Correct, sure.
And so what, as far as we're talking about eating healthier, everywhere you go, you say organic it seems to be like a catchphrase, no fat, low fat, et cetera. And you and I were talking earlier about, being in shape and being able to walk and doing stuff like that. It seems like as not just America, but, the world in general, because places where you did not see obesity, you're starting to see it a lot more. And then here in El Paso, we see a lot of obesity plus diabetes and, the cyclospora that you mentioned. Some of the cases that were reported were a few, but God knows how many went unreported.
Right.
So how about what do you need to do as you as an educator to let people know in public health that you all need to watch out for this and don't worry about because some people, like I say, you said, if they have a stomach ache or they have a low-grade fever, they'll say, well, it'll go away. I'll take some Pepto-Bismol or something. It'll go away. And plus, we also have a lot of – because of our culture, we have a lot of home remedies here in folklore.
Sure, right.
So how do you educate the people about, as far as washing your hands, being careful about parasites, being able to tell when something is good for you and not good for you, eating stuff that perhaps has been outside of the fridge for a while, using the same utensils to cut different mm-hmm. things. And I know that's like 3,000 questions I just threw
right.
at you.
No, right. Well, I think they all have the same theme, and it's going back to the consumer level and individual responsibility. So a few things you hit on regarding diet and human health, a lot of the ways individual bodies respond to exposure to these organisms are based on your own immune system and how healthy you are and if you have any other underlying conditions. When you're talking about prevention and making good choices, it's all about, educating yourself on what you should be eating, but then taking appropriate precautions. And so I think one of the interesting things in my field in public health and looking at the trends of obesity is encouraging people to eat more fruits and vegetables. However, if you look at the data for foodborne outbreaks for the past several years, they're all, you know, most of them, a lot of them are associated with fresh fruits and vegetables. And a lot of that is because people are, in general, eating more fruits and vegetables. So we're going to see more illnesses and we're going to diagnose more outbreaks. But if you take that individual responsibility and you wash your produce before you consume it, even if it says pre-wash, take the time to rinse off that apple, frequent hand washing within the home. We know that a lot of these organisms are, unlike Cyclospora, but others are transmitted person to person within the kitchen environment in particular, keeping raw meats away from the vegetables, separating those to avoid cross-contamination is of utmost importance. And I think, and the other thing, and I get teased about this all the time, when friends ask me to go to dinner, I always say I would much rather meet you at a restaurant than at your home, because in general, restaurants do a much better job at maintaining good food hygiene than maybe someone in their home who adopted their own practices. And one of the things that you hit on that I think is really important when we talk about foodborne illness, not so much at the outbreak level but at the individual level, is leaving foods sitting out unrefrigerated. And typically you wouldn't want to do that for more than 2 hours at room temperature.
And that happens a lot. I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, during the summertime, people like to have get-togethers, cookouts, but sometimes that food stays out there, the potato salad especially or something else. How long should that stay out, or should it be put away right away after it, you know, people finish eating?
Yes, definitely put away right after people finish eating. And my, you know, and I'm teased and I'm paranoid about these kinds of things. But one is when you go to a potluck or a picnic, you know, one is never sure how long that food that person brought has been sitting out. What, did they leave it in their car for the past hour and now they're bringing it? You know, when do you start your clock on when is it still safe to eat? So if we're talking about a sunny day at a park, that two-hour rule I just said doesn't factor in. It would be much shorter. You'd want to eat those foods almost immediately and then discard the leftovers or, if possible, properly, you know, keep them at cool temperatures. So I'm always a little leery of that, even potlucks in the office. It depends on what the food is. I think one thing for folks to watch is, you know, if you have a choice between an iced cake and a cookie, have the cookie. Avoid, you know, foods made with mayonnaise and products such as that, some dairy products that would definitely become compromised quicker than some more non-perishable foods.
And a lot of times these foods that are left out are sometimes it could be the chicken that was grilled, the meat, and definitely at this part of the country, the salsas and the chile con queso, they'll leave it out. And I would imagine that, you know, that being out for 2 to 3 hours, and especially if you're outside, can't be good.
Right. And bacteria in particular can, you know, multiply rapidly. And so get to high numbers within those foods at those temperatures, and then therefore then if someone consumes that, they're at much greater risk of a more severe infection and illness.
We were talking about, and you said that people made fun of you. A lot of us have fetishes, and sometimes, you know, I have a friend who was constantly washing his hands. People have been putting down the antibacterial waterless soaps, but you and I were discussing, it's better than nothing. So are we or do we wash our hands properly when we do? I would imagine not like a surgeon or a doctor.
Right. No, not right. Not like those folks. I do think there's been a great education campaign over the past 10 to 20 years on proper hand washing, more than I had noticed before. But I think it's important to remember it's the most effective way to hand wash is that mechanical removal of what's on your hands, of any organisms. So if you don't have antibacterial soap or if you're worried about antibacterial soap, I think what's important is washing your hands for, you know, at least 30 seconds, you know, 20 to 30 seconds, vigorously under the fingernails. And it's really the mechanical removal, not so much trying to inactivate an organism that might be on the hand that's infectious, but just, you know, removing anything that's there, just like with the washing of the produce before you consume it in your home.
Is it safe to – so some people will use – I know that, you know, marketers and advertisers will get us to buy anything just by labeling it. And we'll buy it because we think it's a deal. If a cracker is 25 cents and then they change it to four for a dollar, it sounds like a deal to us.
Right.
So in washing vegetables, is it okay to use bleach and water, or do you have to buy a special vegetable rinse?
You can use bleach and water. I mean, I use a low-level bleach. But again, I think it's that physical removal that's even more important than most important than anything else that you could use in your kitchen. So I think be wary of the advertisers and just take responsibility for yourself and thoroughly washing underwater just like you would with your hands for 20-30 seconds and drying. It is kind of a hassle and maybe inconvenient, but taking the time to wash that pear, that apple, and drying it before you consume it is probably the most important thing you could do.
If I'm going to play devil's advocate here, because you mentioned that you'll tell your friends that you'll meet them at a restaurant rather than go to their house. And not that you're putting down your friends or anything like that. But some people are going to say, well, Dr. Mena, didn't you just say earlier that Cyclospora was discovered at two restaurant chains?
Right, exactly. And that happens. So I guess whenever you eat out, whenever you eat in your own home, everything we do, there's a risk to it. But you're still, and the data suggests this, you're more likely to become ill from eating either within your home or with someone else's home than at a restaurant. And definitely, this happened associated with those particular restaurants. But that also easily could have happened in someone's homes due to the nature of the product sold. It was prepackaged lettuce that I believe went straight to, the Darden restaurants from Taylor Farms that perhaps were not on the grocery shelves. And now they're not on the grocery shelves because they have such a short shelf life. But we would be just as likely perhaps to have purchased that at a grocery store and served that in our homes.
Is this Cyclospora, is it something that can be cured, or is it something that could be potentially fatal like cholera?
I don't know if I compare it to cholera, but let me just say I think that when you're talking about the range of characteristics within populations, of individuals, that when you're talking about, severely immunocompromised persons, you want to watch any of these organisms, So anything can be potentially fatal depending upon that individual. But it is effectively treated with antibiotics, unlike some of the other, foodborne, waterborne agents that may really need to run its course. It is treatable, so it's important to seek medical attention. And going back to your previous question, I think if someone's experiencing these symptoms and they know that there's been an outbreak and they know potentially it's reached your state, then it would be wise to seek medical attention and have it further analyzed and perhaps diagnosed so that you could obtain appropriate treatment.
It's been probably a couple of weeks since this story broke. And of course, this won't air till Saturday. Today we're taping, and it's a Tuesday. Have those numbers changed at all as far as getting bigger, or is it pretty much being contained?
Well, it's changed in the past day or two. I think it's greater than 400 confirmed cases now, and now in 16 states. However, they've only linked the cases in Iowa and Nebraska to the Darden restaurants. And so that's what's also caused somewhat of a puzzle. So if you look at all the cases confirmed, over half of them are in Iowa and Nebraska. So now the question is, are these other cases, which is a little under half, associated with that outbreak? Because it's so rare, it seems unlikely that it's not associated. However, we know that now there's an increased awareness of Cyclospora, so maybe people are experiencing these symptoms, and now the medical community is looking for it and identifying it. I think it's contained in the fact that I believe that the source is out of exposures of the consumer. I don't think that we're going to see that now. But because it can take such a long time to experience symptoms after you're exposed, for some more than 2 weeks, some even longer, we could still see more cases. However, those cases could be linked to the original source. It doesn't mean there's still a source out there.
Now, I mentioned earlier that you are with the UT School of Public Health in Houston, and the fact that we're going to talk a little bit more about it. So if people are listening right now and they didn't realize that we had that relationship with you all. The fact that they might want to think about going into public health because they want to help people. So tell us a little bit about what students can expect if they were to enroll in your school, and what makes it different from a traditional medical school or something else.
Okay. Well, like I said, we, you know, public health looks at entire populations and not just a single individual, and it covers really five disciplines of public health, including biostatistics, environmental science, management and policy, epidemiology, and behavioral science. So there's really something for everyone. So typically students going into public health come from a range of backgrounds. So it's everyone from sociology and psychology. We've had those interested in pre-law. Obviously the sciences, chemistry and biology. Those interested in political science or, you know, management related issues will go into public health. So it really runs the gamut. So our student population is very diverse. In addition, we have quite a few MDs, so those who are already physicians who like to go back for a degree in public health. Those, as I mentioned, I think when we were speaking earlier, we have a joint MD-MPH program with the Paul L. Foster School of Medicine, Texas Tech, here in El Paso. So we have those getting both degrees at the same time. So it really runs a gamut. So they're going to gain experience in how to look at large data sets. Why do people choose to do what they do? That's the behavioral sciences. What are infections and illnesses that are important throughout the world? How do we prevent them? Prevention is really the main theme of public health. How do we detect them? And how do we prevent, you know, further cases? How do we address them from a policy level? So there's just a lot going on within public health that makes it a really unique opportunity. And we are the only accredited school in the region. And so students would be able to enroll and be part of our school and have a degree from UT Houston, which is the largest medical center in the world, but not have to step one foot out of El Paso.
So they don't have to go to Houston at all?
No, not at all.
And as far as registering, they would go through the University of Houston, Texas Houston?
Exactly, right. So they could call me. They can call the school.
What is the number that they should call?
It is 747-8514 is my direct line, or 747-8500. And they can learn about our different degree programs and opportunities. And we have, you know, about 10 faculty and staff here at this campus, but we have 165 faculty throughout the state, and students at all the campuses, including El Paso, have access to all the faculty. We teach through interactive television. Many of the courses are based here in El Paso and are broadcast to Houston. So even though you're in El Paso, you're not necessarily the distant site all the time. And so we have faculty at all the campuses who serve on student committees, provide research opportunities. So it's really just provides a range of academic and professional opportunities for our incoming students.
Well, thank you very much for being with us here today. We've been visiting with Dr. Christina Mena. Dr. Mena was talking about Cyclospora and, of course, also the school. And if you have additional questions about some of the programs that the school offers, you can call 747-8500. And you have a webpage, I'm sure, that
yes,
they
we
can
do.
Go to?
Yes.
And just type in UT Health, University of Texas Health Sciences Center of Houston, at Houston, excuse me, and you can Google that and you can find out a little bit more about those programs. Thank you very much for being with us here today.
Thank you very much.
Perspectives is taped and produced at the KTP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer and producer, Dennis Wu. You've been tuned to Perspectives. I'm Luis Sainz.